Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick. Conservative provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos was set to hold a free speech week at the University of California, Berkeley this week. The idea here was to protest what Yiannopoulos sees as a stifling of speech and conservative ideas on liberal college campuses. But after a month of controversy and planning, the small student group called the Berkeley Patriot that had organized the event instead canceled it. Yiannopoulos briefly visited the campus anyway. He stood in front of a crowd of about 100 supporters and protesters, while more people protested from behind police barriers. But UC Berkeley has a long history of campus activism, and Milo chose it because it's an epicenter for the debate on free speech and political correctness on college campuses. Takeaway producer Isabel Angel brings us a personal history of free speech at Berkeley.
All this political tension at UC Berkeley would have been unthinkable, not because the school was considered a bastion of liberal thinking, but because it was against campus rules.
See, they weren't allowed to have political speeches on campus unless both sides were there at the same time.
That's my grandfather, Ray Colvig. In the 1960s, he was the public information officer at Berkeley. When he was there in 1963, students started pushing against the university's policy.
And the students, a far-left group at Berkeley, wanted to bring Malcolm X to speak on campus. And the vice chancellor said, no, we can't do that. We can't allow that.
Malcolm X ended up speaking at the YMCA, but students were getting more politically involved. And the administration firmly believed that education and politics did not mix. So instead of welcoming the activism, the university doubled down. In the fall of 1964, the dean of students sent a letter to all the organizations saying they couldn't set up tables at the entrance to the campus for political causes.
And, of course, this raised the ruckus right away.
And then, about 1 month later,
there was kind of a little protest going on. This guy got up on a chair and started to talk. He sounds interesting. I said, who's that guy? And one of my friends says, well, his name is Savio.
Mario Savio was a 21-year-old philosophy student who had spent the summer in the South with the civil rights movement. Back at Cal in the fall of 64, he wanted to raise money for the civil rights group SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and get other students to join the cause. That's when he came up against the university's strict policy against outside politics on campus.
My life changed from that moment on.
The day after my grandpa saw Savio speak on the chair, October 1st, 1964, activist Jack Weinberg sat down at his table, now illegal under university rules, and waited. The police came and arrested him and put him in the police car.
If you were a student and identified yourself, you would be disciplined by the dean's office. You're not identifying yourself. We're arresting you because you must be an outsider.
But students surrounded the car, and one man got on top to address the crowd.
And the police were, we only had a small police group at that time. They didn't wear military-looking things. They wore loafers, sort of, things. And so they came out, and they tried to move him off, but he said, no, we're going to stay here. And then the others started coming up.
I'm going to get off the car, okay.
And pretty soon Savio was up. He took his shoes off first so he wouldn't scratch the car. And he began to talk.
We're staying right here until this guy is released.
And he was fascinating.
We must really feel very, very sorry for these poor policemen here, you know.
He had ways of expressing language that was different from others. And it was a real phenomenon.
Very like, you know, Adolf Eichmann. He had a job to do. He fit into the machinery.
And it was exciting for me, of course. You know, it could be scary at times.
Jack Weinberg was in the police car for 32 hours, and my grandpa was there all night talking to reporters. Administrators, led by the president of the UC system, Clark Kerr, got together behind closed doors to hammer out an agreement that would get the students to leave.
I propose that everybody at this meeting get into that damn building, then you sit at the desk, you sit on the floor, you make it absolutely impossible for them to conduct their work. Yeah!
In the end, Kerr did hand over an agreement, and Savio read it to the crowd. Jack Weinberg would be released. The school would set up a committee of students and administrators to review the policy toward political activities on campus, and students would stop all illegal protest activity.
All right. I would like that those who have taken part in this protest will agree by acclamation to accepting this document.
But it was far from over. That night, the students gave themselves a name, the Free Speech Movement. 2 months later, the university still hadn't made any changes to its policy, and the students were fed up. On December 2nd, 1964, Mario Savio climbed the steps of Sproul Hall, the main administrative building on campus, and he faced the crowd.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Students and activists occupied Sproul Hall for 2 days.
We shall overcome.
Even Joan Baez showed up.
We shall.
At 3 a.m. on December 3rd, police arrested around 800 people and took them to jail.
They're tugging them by their feet and throwing them down the stairs. They've thrown boys and girls down the stairs, their heads jostling and banging against the banisters and marble stairs.
The next day, students held a massive protest and shut down the campus with picket lines. UC President Clark Kerr had had enough. On December 7th, Kerr promised an extraordinary convocation at the Greek Theater on campus. Around 16,000 students filed in to listen to Kerr talk as the tension mounted.
The academic world and the people of this state expect of us conduct commensurate with our past achievements and our high capacities. We should expect no less of ourselves. Thank you.
Mario Savio was there, but as my grandpa Ray Colvig recalled, the administration didn't want to let him speak.
And the people were worried about Savio. They were worried that he would lead the students out of the bottom of the Greek theater up onto the stage and you'd have a real riot going on there. So there was a lot of police there.
Then Savio took the stage.
So Savio strode over to the microphone and he started to speak and the police came and grabbed him. They pulled him along by his necktie.
My grandpa told me that moment was a turning point in the free speech movement.
And the fact that this happened at the end of Kerr's speech, in front of everybody, that really led to the faculty having their huge meeting in Wheeler and voting, very big majority, voting to give in to what was generally the city center law, you know, that you could speak in public places, and the campus was not different from that.
My grandpa died in 2012, just 4 months after we had this conversation. So he's not around to see all the controversy playing out today. And even though the student leaders called off their far-right free speech week at Berkeley, my uncle, Tim Colvig, says my grandpa would have agreed with the university's decision to allow them to speak.
I think it would have been painful for him to have the university protecting that sort of speech. But I do believe that he would have believed that they ought to be able to speak, as painful as that is.
For The Takeaway, I'm Isabel Angel.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.